Hello and welcome. My name is Blanna Tracy and this is my podcast, Untold. Across this 10-part series, I'll be taking a look at different facets of Irish society and speaking to people with unique voices and stories. Now, I wanted to share the story of an amazing young woman, really successful, had everything going for her and still does. Her name is Avril, and I think that plenty of you are going to be able to relate to her. She's your sister, she's your mate, she's the girl who sits beside you in work. I met her in Women's Aid and she courageously shared her story. And the hope is that her sharing this experience will encourage even just one person to get out of their abusive relationship. Always know that there is help at hand and it can be done safely and you're not alone. This is Avril's story. So I guess let's start at the beginning of your relationship. So how did things start off?
In a regular fashion, I suppose. I met a friend of a friend and there was a flirting that went back and forth for a few months. Although looking back, I mean, he was definitely the instigator and you would probably describe it as chasing me for quite a long time.
Okay.
And eventually we got together and for the first while everything was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is the case generally.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear that a lot, that people, when they're really charming, they kind of swept you away.
Absolutely. It's, you know, you very quickly get put on a pedestal, which is great at the time, but then you recognise later that it's very easy to fall from a pedestal as well. So it's a term that's used around, would be sort of love bombing. Almost.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard this.
So it's a similar... I'm going to get into a tangent already. But it's also a word that's used for cults.
Wow.
For people to get people involved in cults. And I find there's definitely parallels between abusive people and their partners in this huge display of love.
Okay.
Great grand gestures.
Yeah.
You're everything to them. You're the whole world.
Yeah.
But the danger with being so perfect is that facade, you know, it's so easily broken.
Okay.
And then once that facade is there, that's when they start sort of picking away.
Right. Okay.
At the small things.
Okay. So I guess everything was hunky-dory. It was all great. And you're the most amazing person that I've ever met in my entire life. And then... At what point, looking back now, what were the red flags? What were the kind of the little
moments? It started really gradually, and I've always said it's a very insidious thing. It's sort of, you know, sly looks, small comments, you know, innocuous comments, you know. Like you would be laughing with friends and they would make a snide comment to sort of bring you back down to ground level.
Okay.
Sort of like they would just be acting as if you're, you know,
just knock
being
you back
too big for
bit.
Your boots or something.
Okay.
Whereas you're just actually normal, having probably a normal conversation.
Yeah.
So okay. Start with sly looks, sideways looks,
chipping away
little
your confidence.
Comments.
Okay.
Yeah, like that. And that's, I think that started pretty quickly.
Right. And did other people notice that he was doing that?
Not at that stage, because I mean, I suppose it was seen a little bit as banter.
Right.
So it wasn't until later when those comments became more frequent that other people would start noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that started quickly was taking all my time or like booking up my time.
Right.
It's like planning things far in advance, even though we were very new couples, so planning things, buying tickets for things. Things that sound quite romantic, but actually at the same time, it was way too intense for where we were.
Okay.
There was a lot of text messages, phone calls, you know, and not necessarily where are you at the start, but just constantly keeping your time.
Okay.
Being involved in your time.
Mm.
And wanting to be involved in every area of your life.
Right. And I mean, from the outsider's point of view, it's like, wow, he's sharing you with gifts. He wants to spend all of his time with you.
Yeah.
Was that kind of how your friends were sort of reacting?
Yeah, and I suppose I felt, even though I was feeling a little uncomfortable, I kind of kept telling myself, and even other people were saying, maybe you're just not used to someone being so nice to you. Maybe this is the good guy that's supposed to come along.
Yeah.
So, everybody has relationships that don't work out. And I suppose there's a weird fallacy of the nice guy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Here he is, this gentleman, and he wants to whisk you off your feet kind of thing.
Yeah, but I was feeling uncomfortable, but I didn't really know why I was feeling uncomfortable.
Okay, your intuition.
But it was. And other people were going, "That's amazing. You know, he wants to go away for a weekend." It was like, yeah. "But I've only been with this person for 2 months." You know.
Right. Okay.
So it's just.
It's a lot.
And it doesn't sit well, but you go with it because you think maybe this is how it's supposed to be.
Okay.
You know.
And we should also just mention here as well, at the time that you met him, I hope you don't mind me saying that, your dad had passed away recently, so you were kind of, you were quite vulnerable when you met him.
My father had died within the previous year, and I was back living at home, so I was out of Dublin. I didn't have much. I was a student, so I didn't have much money or anything. And I was very low. I mean, it's, you know, losing a parent is a very big thing.
Horrendous thing. Yeah, absolutely awful. Yeah.
And it was, I suppose I was in that sort of position where I wanted somebody to come along and make the decisions for me.
Yeah.
To look after me, to take care of me. But it wasn't actually being taken care of. It was more, you know, being directed.
Being told.
In a certain way. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. So we're now a few months into the relationship. He's kind of taking a lot of your time. Were any of your friends saying, "Here, I haven't seen you in ages. Are you going to come out?"
That wasn't actually the way it went. We were out quite a lot, but I was out with his friends.
Okay.
And I would bring my friends with along. I mean, there wasn't that immediate isolation. The isolation came in not telling people what was going on between the two of us, as opposed to a physical isolation from people.
Okay.
And I think the isolation can happen in different ways. And I definitely felt emotionally isolated.
Right, okay.
Whereas everybody thought this was amazing and I just wasn't feeling right, but I didn't know how to tell people that it wasn't quite right.
So what was kind of going on then behind closed doors where people didn't know, couldn't see what was happening?
But at that stage, there was a constant criticism of who I was by even about 6 months. All the things that apparently I was amazing for at the start were terrible. It sort of had flipped on its head, and very quickly the criticism had started to chip away at my identity and at my self-confidence. So he would get jealous if I was popular amongst the people he knew.
Right.
Even, you know, because, you know, then there was this fear that they liked me better than him, or that I wanted to be friends with them more than I wanted to be his boyfriend or his girlfriend.
Yeah.
It was very strange sort of paranoia and insecurity on his part.
Okay.
That made me just get sort of quieter and quieter in myself and start just becoming sort of this quieter version of myself.
So what kind of comments would he make?
So because, as I said, I was when I met him, I was finishing my master's, and there was a very stressful time. I was trying to write my thesis and I would needed a lot of time for that, and he would get very angry and very annoyed if I weren't to come into town. And I remember going into town at like midnight just to go to see him for an hour, to go home to try and finish writing my master's, just because I knew that he would get angry, and not only angry but would sulk or would give me the silent treatment. Silence was always a very powerful weapon for my ex, ignoring me, giving me the silent treatment.
Guilt tripping you
constantly. Yeah, there was a lot of emotional blackmail.
Okay,
he needed me and I wasn't there, so that meant that I didn't care. Plus, I was living at home. I was trying to look after my mum after the death of my father, so I didn't have a car, so I was kind of stuck and so trying to get up and down to visit him. So there wasn't so much consciousness of the things that I was trying to do, rather than when I couldn't do something, then that was a big deal. Often on nights out, I would be getting the bus to Dublin and I would start crying about 4 or 5 miles out from O'Connell Street. And I didn't really know why, but I just I would be really excited to go to Dublin, and then I would start just getting just this feeling of dread, because I knew that almost automatically the novelty of me being there would have worn off. And he would start this sort of ignoring and sullenness, especially if I was having a good time.
Wow.
Which is so strange, you know.
He sounds like he was, I'm not trying to put anything onto it, but it sounds like he was really jealous of you.
That's interesting, actually. I've never heard that back, but that kind of makes sense in a way.
like you're achieving a lot. You're, you know, you're achieving, yeah. you're doing your master's. Like that's a huge thing. Yeah. And it's like he's trying to sabotage it.
I think there was a lot of sabotage along the way in anything that I did. Because he would tell me constantly I could do anything and I was amazing. And he would always say the words, but then his actions were quite the opposite.
Okay.
So even later in the next couple of years, things that I've achieved, he would knock back. I remember even like, because I'm not one for, you know, dressing up a lot. And I remember one night my friends go, no, you're dressing up, we're doing up. And dressed me up and I looked amazing and I felt great. And yeah. everyone was like, oh, you look fantastic. Why don't you dress up more?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
And I remember coming home that night and going, did you not think I look nice? And he just said, oh, I saw what you were trying to do.
Oh.
So it's just a constant knock. I mean, if the praise wasn't come from him, I don't know, he was just so uncomfortable with it. It was strange because it was almost a reverse of what I've read a lot of other people go through.
Yeah.
In that, you know, they isolate you, you know, or they from people. He didn't think I was cheating or anything.
Okay.
But he was jealous that I preferred his friends. And then he was jealous maybe that I might be more popular than he was with his friends.
Yeah.
It was a very strange thing. It wasn't a romantic jealousy.
Okay. Okay.
It was a sort of a personal jealousy.
I mean, and that's the thing actually about dating abuse and domestic abuse and domestic violence as well. Every single situation so different,
yeah,
and so unique, and it Absolutely. Isn't one size fits all, and no. that's why it's so important for us to hear your story, because it's they're different red flags for everybody.
Yeah, but it's your gut. And that's exactly it.
Your gut kind of tells you this isn't right.
If you think something isn't right, it's not right.
Yeah,
It's really difficult to learn how to believe yourself and believe that intuition, but it's very important too.
Yeah,
in the end.
And so, when was your intuition kind of always in the back of your mind, saying this isn't right? Even as things got worse?
A lot of the time. I'm not sure when it's or how or if. I think I kept waiting for things to get better. And things would get better for a while. And then it would get worse again. And then it would get better. And then it would get worse. And a lot of the time you don't bring it up when things are better. Because then you'll make it worse.
Right.
So you want the good weeks to last as long as possible.
Okay.
So you're like, okay, I'll wait until he's calmed down or he's in a better mood to discuss the fact that, you know, he's not being very nice with him. But then you can't, because first of all, if you do, then you're ruining the good time you're having, and that's your fault.
Yeah.
And like that, you want it to last, and you hope that they've changed within themselves.
Yeah.
And
that they'll wake up,
yeah,
and they'll see, yeah, and that never,
unfortunately, rarely happens.
No,
yeah,
it hardly ever happens.
So,
so I guess, I mean, how long did the relationship last altogether?
So we were together for about, we were in total about 3.5 years.
Okay.
I think we were together for about 2 years, and I actually broke up with him.
Okay.
At one point, for a few months, but went back.
Okay, and why did you break up with him, and how did he react?
Because his behaviour was becoming so problematic.
Okay.
And the emotional blackmail was becoming so strong, and I couldn't do anything right. And it was a random day and a random argument that I just didn't follow him.
Okay.
Because usually he would walk away and I would end up following him like this little dog. It's kind of horrible to picture myself doing that now, like him, you know, shouting at me and then me following him.
Yeah.
Because he would always be the person to leave.
Right. And he'd want you to come after him.
I had to follow, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
And one day I just didn't. I can't even remember what the argument was about now.
But there was just something inside you said, you know what, I'm done.
It was just, yeah.
Okay.
But I went back after about 4 months.
Was there kind of constant sort of, I'm sorry? I mean, what did he say to you to make you kind of give it another go?
There were promises. There was a letter. There was,
like, did he ever admit that what he was doing was wrong?
He did at that point. But at that point, there had been nothing physical. So it was quite difficult to describe to people, and I hadn't at that point, I don't think I even realized myself what was going on.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I was telling other people,
yeah,
about his behavior.
Yeah. And I mean, and the other thing is, I mean, you don't have a black eye.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have like the physical signs, yeah, of an abusive relationship.
So it was more, I suppose, I treated it more as a normal breakup. I just hadn't possibly realized that I had been as conditioned as I was.
And that seems to be the case for a lot of survivors, that they go back several times.
Yeah.
Because that's what, like, that word that you used, you're conditioned.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's like he's been kind of chipping away at you all this time.
He'd become very intertwined with my world as well. So, you know, I was missing a lot of my own life by leaving.
Yeah. It's almost like a divorce.
Yeah. I mean, actually, in that way, when I left, I was made more isolated, actually, probably physically.
Really?
Because obviously, you know, you can't really mix with the same people or whichever.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So your friends and his friends, they obviously didn't realize how he was treating you and that he was being so horrible to you.
Yeah.
So he got to keep the friends.
Yeah. And I mean, when there was a little, a mixture of friends, but it just, because I hadn't realized what was going on, I hadn't told anybody what was going on.
Okay.
So there was nobody to say, you know, don't do it.
Okay.
Although actually, now that a couple of people said don't do it, but it wasn't so black and white at that point.
Okay. Okay.
And I think I was just drawn back into it.
Yeah.
Like almost, it kind of felt almost magnetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went back a second time?
So I went back a second time.
All the promises and how long did they last?
I don't think they even began.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, the letter that he had written, anytime I brought it up, he was like, I wish I'd never written it. I don't actually believe anything I said in it now. It's, you know, it's all your fault.
Oh my God.
Quickly enough, after we got back together, we moved in together.
Okay. And how did that affect?
Possibly the worst decision I've ever made.
Right. Okay. So
I felt that I had to, because I was always on the back foot in showing him how much I wanted to be with him, because it was always him saying that I didn't care about him enough.
Mm.
It was never about him not loving me.
Okay.
So he would be angry and I was making him angry because I wasn't showing him enough love. So no matter what I did, it wasn't enough, even though he was the one that was becoming angry and using silence and using manipulation.
Yeah.
So I suppose I felt that by moving in together, I was showing him the commitment that, you know, it's a pretty big commitment.
Yeah. What age were you, by the way, when you moved in?
At that stage, I was 29.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So young enough.
Young enough, but like, you know, you're
old enough as well.
Yeah. I mean, you're together a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was the time that, you know, I really thought that this was it and, you know, everything was going to be okay and we were making this commitment to each other. It's 29, so I mean, you're an adult and you're in an adult relationship. It could be going to marriage or children or whichever.
Of course.
But even by the first couple of days of living together, it had already gotten worse.
Like my heart's actually breaking.
I know. It's just I suppose I was so full of hope as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time. And I think that's the common thread, I think, with anybody that goes back to a partner, is that you're just hoping, because they have promised they'll change and you want them to change.
Of course. And you're in love.
And you're in love.
You love them.
And they've also convinced you that you're the only person that can help them.
Right. Okay.
So a lot of times, you know, he would say, he had had issues and, you know, he was suffering from anxiety or depression or childhood or whatever issues, you know, that come up. And you were the only person.
Mm.
So if you were to leave, then you're abandoning them. So you have to, you know, he would often say, it's not my fault that you can't handle me.
Right. Okay. You know, so there's something wrong with you.
There's something wrong with you because you can't deal with me when I'm being awful.
Wow.
It's such a twisted way of thinking.
Yeah.
But that was so logical to him.
Mm.
And I also find really big parallels with that idea that you see in movie, in like teen movies and things. You know, if you loved me, you'd sleep with me.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Mm. It's like, if you loved me, you'd do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Why don't you?
Like, if you obviously don't love me enough because, you know, you're not acting the way I want you to act.
Mm. And you see that with in so many different levels, like that, if you don't sleep with me, you don't love me. Or if you don't spend this night with me, you don't love me.
You're having fun with your friends. That means that you don't want to be with me. You know, it's a whole thing, and it's this idea and using love as a manipulative tool.
Mm. Because I guess as women, we're kind of told, oh, you know, you want a man who's going to do everything. He wants to spend all of his time with you. And the last thing you want is a guy who just wants to hang out with his friends and ditches you all the time.
Yeah.
But he's calling you, he's texting you, he wants to spend time with you. He's the dream.
Yeah.
But I mean, It's just, it's like women have already, we start off on the back foot because society tells us this is the perfect guy.
But we're also, I think we're told to be polite. We're told to be, to not be crazy.
Yeah, you know, that word.
Don't be irrational.
Yeah.
You know, you're overthinking it. You're mm-hmm. oversensitive. You're over emotional. So, and I think we're told that from when we're children.
Mm.
So you do develop these ideas mm. over time. And unfortunately, if you do end up in a situation with an abusive partner, they're going to use all of that.
Yeah, of course.
To their advantage.
Yeah.
You know.
And you, so like and you
you're
don't.
Too, you're just too emotional.
Yeah.
You know, you're being paranoid. You're being insecure.
You're a psycho.
You're a psycho.
That's yeah. that is the word, isn't it?
Every man's ex is a psycho. I don't know how many times boyfriends have said, "Oh, my ex is a psycho."
Yeah, I've heard that so many times, and I think to myself, "Wow, like what a word to use to describe someone that you once loved."
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's just
a way to completely whitewash or blackwash or just strike through anything that they were.
Yeah.
You know?
The relationship continued and the abuse continued
and increased.
And increased, okay.
Very quickly, yeah.
After when you moved in?
After when we moved in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the kind of the next part of the abuse, well, if you don't mind talking about it, obviously?
No, not at all. For the most part and for a long time after I left, I recognized it mostly as psychological abuse. Mm-hmm. And it was an emotional abuse. I think anybody that's been within an abusive person has had a certain element of that, even if it's after the fact of violence. You know, there's a, I'm sorry, I, you know, but I got worked up or whatever. So there's a manipulation of, or sort of a guilt that they use.
They're blaming something
else. Yeah, but the problem is, especially when you live with somebody, is that you begin to change your own behavior. And you adapt to the other person's moods.
Okay.
So you begin to modify your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start doing that, and I think there's a certain amount that we do, but that's called compromise. This is different. This is when I came home from work, I wasn't allowed to be in a bad mood.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what happened at work.
Mm-hmm.
I had to just be, I should be happy that I was home and he was there. And that was it. So I used to come home and I could have had the worst day in the world, but I'd stick on a smile and, you know, that would be it. You just have to pretend.
So he
pretend to be happy.
He was never there for you.
Not in the end, no.
Right, okay.
No. In fact, at one point he even threw in my face the fact that he had been kind to me while I had been mourning my father.
Oh my God, you're
so
like seriously.
Dark, wow. You know, like I was there for you when you were crying about your dead father.
Wow.
Like it's insane to me now looking back.
That's terrifying.
You know.
That's actually like terrifying.
So you're modifying your behavior to such an extent that that's when you start to feel like you're losing yourself. If I came in and because I would listen to music on my way home, I quickly learned that if I came in with my earphones in and I was listening to the end of a song, he would get angry and not talk to me for the rest of the evening. Because
for the rest
I wasn't,
of the evening?
Yeah, because I wasn't ready to go, hello.
Wow.
Honey, I'm home.
Okay. Okay. So you quickly learned, okay, I can't do these things.
You can't, but then you do those things and then the goalposts move.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter how much you modify your behavior because there's always going to be something. So you just, I don't know.
And was it, like when he was reacting to you, was he shouting and roaring? Like you said that he would give you the silent treatment a lot, but was he ever shouting and kind of screaming?
Yeah. The shouting began long before we moved in, especially after nights out, and surrounding bedroom issues as well.
Okay,
where he would scream and shout. He would square up to me. You know, his face would be right next to mine. He would, you know, clench fists and gritted teeth.
This is before you moved in with him?
Yeah, and then it became more afterwards.
Wow.
So there was always, I didn't feel it before I moved in, but I definitely, after I moved in, there was always like a threat that he could be violent.
Okay.
Like he used to say things like, I was lucky he wasn't a violent man.
Right.
You know, he once said the words, if I didn't have my anger under control, your face wouldn't still be intact.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I remember repeating that back to him and he was like, do you know how hard that is for me to hear? And I was like,
for you to hear.
You said it.
You said
yeah,
it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And he was like, you took it out of context. It's like, there's no context that can be.
No, no, that's
viewed
that is
as
just
a normal thing to say to somebody.
Yeah.
I would ask him to you know, maybe get help for his anger and thought that by working through his anger, he would, you know, become, you know, and well, at that point, I wanted him to learn to love himself.
Yeah. Okay.
And to help him and to help him through his issues.
Okay. You were still trying to help
him.
Yeah,
the whole time. Yeah.
And did you ever tell, like, your mum, for instance, the things that he'd been saying to you?
No. I did. I think the difficult thing when you get back together with somebody as well is that there's an embarrassment. Like an embarrassment that I made the wrong decision. It's difficult to explain.
Yeah. Was it almost like you don't want someone to go, well, I told you so?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. That's understandable. I mean, I think everybody feels
sort of,
that.
You know, well, I've made this decision and now I have to go through with it.
Now I have to live with it. Okay.
Or at least till I can't.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this was quite quickly after we had moved in.
Yeah. Is it a case? Like I've read quite a few stories and people's situations and a lot of women kind of feel like they haven't been abused enough.
Absolutely.
That it hasn't happened. It hasn't gotten violent enough.
Absolutely. I think in the end, when it did become violent, I felt almost a sort of relief that I had an absolute reason.
Okay. So in your head, you're kind of saying, if he ever touches me, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Right.
But it was the second time.
Okay. So what happened the first time?
The first time we had some argument about something ridiculous. And he ended up, I was standing in the doorway and he was screaming at me and he was calling me names and I was trying to reason with him and to stick up for myself and say, you can't do this. We can't go on like this.
Yeah.
And he ended up closing the door on top of me. So
while you're standing.
I was in the door jam and he, you know, closed the door on top of me.
Wow.
Not in my face. I mean, like I was actually caught between the door and the door jam. It was sore and scary. I think, you know, that was the first time I was very scared of him physically. I'd always been scared of him getting angry or scared of disappointing him or scared of, you know, but that was the first time I was scared of, like, properly scared of him physically.
Like, what did you do? What happened?
I cried.
Yeah.
I asked him why he did it. He said it was because he wanted to close the door. He was very cold, very calm. There was none of what I had always seen in movies and in the media of, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. There was none of that.
No.
It was like, look what you made me do.
Look what you made me do. Right, you know, it's your fault.
You should have gotten out of the way. And unfortunately, that argument kind of went on for about half an hour and I ended up apologising to him.
Oh my God.
Which is so horrible.
And because you wanted it to be over?
Yeah, and you know, he was amazing at making me feel sorry for him.
Like master manipulator.
Absolutely. But yeah, just that ability to make me feel sorry for him. And, you know, I think he was you don't know what it's like, you know, for me, for you to think this of me, even though he was showing me it.
It's like,
every
no,
day.
That is who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even I wasn't able to say that at that point.
Okay. So, know? So I guess you said there was another time, which was the final kind of.
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks after that.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, I mean, the escalation of things was so fast, faster than I ever thought. I think we only ended up living together about 8 months. And within that time, it had just escalated, obviously out of control. Mm. We'd been out for dinner. I said something that went against his opinion, which he didn't like. And he started shouting at me at dinner.
In the restaurant?
In the restaurant.
Were people kind of looking over? People were.
I think people were just uncomfortable. I don't think he was loud enough to make it a full scene.
Right.
But I left the restaurant and like that, he came out and walked past me and walked off.
Doing the silent treatment.
Just doing the silent treatment.
Okay. And you have to go after him again.
Yeah, I didn't actually go after him that time. I just went home to our home.
Okay.
And I thought he didn't come home that night. But he came home the next morning. And I tried to talk to him again, tried to reason with him, and this blew up into this huge row.
Oh my God.
Of the swearing, of the shouting and screaming and everything. And that I ended up standing, he was on his way out to work, and I ended up standing in front of the front door. Doors are a common theme in my life with this person. And he dragged me from the door and knocked me into a wall and onto the ground and then laughed at me. I was devastated.
Yeah, yeah. But just terrified.
I wasn't so much terrified as...
How did you feel?
Weirdly resolute. That probably sounds odd. And I just kind of remember sitting there going, okay, this is it then. Yeah. And then when he was looking at me sitting on the ground, he laughed at me as if I'd done it on purpose to make it look like he had done this to me. Again, like there was never any acceptance of responsibility.
Oh my God.
On his part, which was terrifying. You know, even like, I mean, as I was sitting there, I think he laughed and called me a silly cunt.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I remember I got up and I don't know if you can even call it trying to talk afterwards. And I was rubbing my wrists and he was like, don't you dare even try and like make out that, you know, that I was sore.
So
like,
wow.
Because he had grabbed my wrists. And okay. That's how he had knocked me into the wall.
So don't even suggest
that
you're
hurt. Done this.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That was the final straw for you. Did he leave and go to work then? And were you left on your own?
Yeah, he left and went to work.
Was it a relief when he left and walked out of the house?
Yeah. But I was so in shock. I was so numb. I really didn't do anything for a whole night.
Mm.
Didn't talk to anybody until the next day. He didn't come home that night either, thank God. And yeah, I just did nothing.
Traumatised.
Yeah. And devastated.
Yeah.
I was really upset that the decision had been made for me.
Okay.
That I had to go.
Okay.
And I imagine that sounds very strange. Mm. I felt like, and I think that's why I stayed there the night, because I knew that once I told somebody, there was no going back.
Yeah. I mean, there's...
So I needed that time, I think, to go, you know, and maybe there was a little part of me that hoped maybe he would come back and could figure it out before I had to tell anybody.
Yeah. And apologize.
Or apologize or do anything. Mm.
So who did you tell?
I told my older sister in all of the elder sister wisdom.
Okay. And did you call her and say, look...
I called her and I asked her to meet me.
Okay.
Because I also had no money.
Okay.
And I had to... Actually, what happened was I had no money and I had to meet him to ask him for money.
Okay, because he had taken control of your finances.
Yeah. Well, what had happened was he was only working part-time, so I was paying all the rent.
Okay, because that's fair.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And he would take care of the bills.
Right.
For listeners, I'm doing inverted commas because he never did.
No.
So, and I wasn't in a very well-paid job at the time. It was like my first job after college. It was entry level. So I think almost 3/4 of my wages were probably going on rent.
Okay.
So I had very little left. It was our money, so. But I would end up then every time having to ask him for money.
Right.
Even though I was the one.
It's your money.
In full-time work and, you know, starting in a career and things.
So did he have your card?
No, it's just that I would pay for so much that I had nothing left. So then he would give me money out of his wages.
Right.
So it made it inaccessible for me to have my own, you know.
Mm.
Okay. And because of that, yeah, I had no money and I had to meet him the following day to ask him for money, which is one of the most degrading things I've ever had to do. I remember he was sitting with a mutual friend and he was laughing and calling me a psycho. And everybody knows that you're a psycho.
Wow.
I told everybody what happened and they all think you're crazy.
Like getting all of your
friends.
I think he probably
as soon as he could, he had tried to, you know,
Make out
that I was crazy as soon as he could.
Oh my
God.
And
then after that, I rang my sister.
Okay.
And I sat in Burger King.
Yeah.
On O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
And I met her. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that sister definitely, with the couple of months previously, she had been showing up more and more in my life.
Right.
You know, asking me to go for walks and things. So she definitely knew that there was something amiss or awry.
Okay. Was she saying anything to you? Was she saying, you know, how is the relationship? Or?
Yeah, but I mean, I was quite good at covering things up as well. And I was also very good at going, oh, but he's upset about this and he's had a terrible time with this. So, I mean, I was doing his work for him at that point.
And that's kind of that, you hear that over and over again.
That happens a lot. Yeah.
Okay. So thank God you're in Burger King with your sister. Like, thank God you're there with your sister. Yeah. You're telling her, and she
was great. And she brought me home to my mum.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Luckily, it was a bank holiday weekend.
Okay.
And this was the Sunday. I felt so sad to have to tell my mum. I felt so sad for her, because I knew she would feel really sad. And the another thing is that it's not, the subject wasn't something that we didn't know about. My mum has helped many women, and my father had helped many people in the communities that we lived in that had been in this situation.
So oh, really?
We were quite educated
okay.
on the topic. So it really doesn't matter who you are or what you do. I think it can really happen. It can happen, and it happens so slowly to people, they don't realize until they're in it.
Yeah.
So I suppose it was tough having to tell my mum, and she didn't. She never said that to me. She never said, "But we told you." She was wonderful. She was fantastic, and she had the wisdom to just let me talk, and not try and ask me why I didn't do this or didn't do that. Or she also had the wisdom not to tell me to stay away from him.
Okay. Because that would almost push you in.
I think, I think it has, you know, she said, it's your decision. I'll always be here. You know, but she was never going to go come down hard line on it, because I suppose she had the experience in that you don't ever want to isolate somebody that's going through it. So if you were to say to somebody, if you ever go back to that person, that's ridiculous, or that's stupid, or that's the end, that person is never going to come to you again to tell you anything.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's an incredible piece of advice, because I think that people, you don't know the language, what to say, how to actually reach out and
it's
say, look,
really
this
tough.
Isn't right.
Yeah, because you want to go, oh my God, what a bastard. But yeah. You have to be careful in those days, I think. And the only thing people want you to do is to listen. They don't want advice. They don't want your pop psychology. They just want you to listen, because the first things that people are telling you are probably the very mild things.
Okay.
They're the things that they're able to say out loud. There's a whole well of other information yet to come. So if you begin to push people away, or send them straight to therapy or counselling, or, you know, or over dramatic and things, then you're going to close down the conversation. I think it's difficult, I know, because I know it was difficult for my friends and family to hear a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it's not as difficult as it is for that person to talk.
Yeah.
And that's, it's the most important thing, is to listen to people
okay.
without advice.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's amazing that you're saying that. I feel like I'm learning from you so much, because I feel like it's natural for people to go, well, why don't you, or
exactly,
why didn't
yeah,
you, or this,
yeah.
you know?
Have you thought about doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's really important for even up to a year, if not more, afterwards. Because people constantly try and get you to move on. But as I say, I only processed one type of abuse in a certain time period. And then the next year I realized something else, and the next something else. And it takes a long time to peel back those layers of what's happened.
Okay.
Because your brain is only able to figure one thing out at a time.
Right.
So, I mean, people were like, you should move, you should, you know, maybe, why don't you move to Cork, or go to Galway, or move to Germany, or whatever. And it was always me that had to do the moving on.
Yeah.
But I hadn't even started to comprehend what had happened to me.
Yeah. Did he ever tried to contact you after you broke up with him? And
he did for the first while. Yeah.
Okay. Did you want you to get back with him?
Yeah.
Okay. And were you tempted to?
Or
how did you feel?
Yes, of course I was tempted to.
Yeah.
I thought I was in love.
Yeah.
I mean, now I realize I wasn't. What it was wasn't love. I suppose is a better way of saying it.
Like, I don't want to use the word brainwashed, but were you kind of
conditioned?
Yeah.
I suppose almost a Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, and that happens so often.
I think so, yeah.
It really does.
Well, they've wiped your confidence out, you know, and you start to think, maybe I'm not good enough for anybody else. Maybe nobody else would want me. Maybe I'm not worth it. And it's easier to stay than it is to go for a very long time.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it's always easier to stay.
Yeah.
And I know I've said to people before, because people are always asking you why you didn't leave. Mm. And I always, well, now I say to them, well, I did.
Yeah.
Which confuses them, because it kind of, yeah, it stops them from putting it on you.
Yeah.
So it gets thrown back out into the middle and people don't know what to do when you say that.
Yeah.
But also that there's always a reason to leave.
Mm.
I think in any relationship,
mm,
there was always hundreds of reasons to leave. But I had run out of reasons to stay.
Okay. And that was it.
That was the big thing.
That was it.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't just affect one part of society.
No, it can affect everybody.
Exactly. And also, interesting,
you never think it's going to happen to you.
No.
I think that's a big part of it, leaving as well, or owning up to the fact that you're suffering abuse. It's that nobody wants to be an abused person,
mm,
or a person that has suffered abuse. Mm. So you're looking for other signs than the ones that you're seeing.
Yeah.
So, like, you shouldn't have to feel like you have to tick all of the boxes of abuse.
Okay.
One box is enough to leave.
Oh my God.
You know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
First time, yeah, he tells you to F off or calls you a bitch, if you want to go, just go.
That's it.
Get out.
Like, that is good enough reason, yeah, as any, yeah.
You don't. And I think there's the media can be very difficult, and it's great when people get coverage and the topic gets coverage, but it's very easy for the media to go for the most visually dramatic,
mm,
stories or sections of a story, because, mm, where there's physical abuse, there's very often many other types of abuse, but they don't get covered as much.
Yeah.
And I think the more we focus on psychological and emotional abuse, the quicker we can get people out before it doesn't turn to physical abuse.
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm trying to do with this,
yeah,
interview, is to kind of show people that it doesn't have to be violent for it to be abusive.
No.
And for it to be wrong.
Yeah.
And to listen to
just
your gut.
Because he's not hitting you, it's, you know, it doesn't mean he's not hurting you.
So at what point did you get in touch with Women's Aid?
I actually didn't get in touch with Women's Aid until possibly over a year after I left my relationship. And I think it's really important to note that it doesn't matter at what stage,
mm-hmm,
they're always there to listen. And even if you've left and you're having problems, if you're struggling emotionally or in any other way, they'll be able to direct you to somebody. They'll be able to help. And the biggest thing is that they listen without judgment. I never felt like I had to quantify the pain I had suffered. You know, so I never felt like it had to be physical. It had to be terrible. Like, it was all terrible. But they listened to me about the smallest thing and the biggest thing, mm, in with the same amount of compassion. And that was the biggest thing. And I would encourage anybody, whether you're in a situation at the moment, whether you're contemplating leaving, whether you've left or even years later, if you need their help, they're there to support you. And it's one of the best things I've ever done was to contact them. And they've helped me incredibly. So
amazing.
Yeah.
I really hope, and I think I know, that you opening up and being so honest, I think, is helping people who are listening to this right now. So,
oh, I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really do appreciate your time.
It's okay.
And you're amazing. I actually feel kind of emotional having listened to your story, but thank you so much.
No problem.
I can't thank Avril enough for sharing her story. She's a huge inspiration to all of us. Women's Aid have a 24-hour free phone line on 1800 341 900 or go to womensaid.ie to find out more. I have a bonus episode released alongside Avril's story where I sit down with Women's Aid CEO Sarah Benson, who sheds a light on the current situation in Ireland, the kind of help that is at hand, and advice for getting out of an unhealthy relationship safely. Thank you to Christina Sherlock and to Sarah Benson from Women's Aid for all of their guidance and their time. Thank you to Taz and Rian Kelleher for the finishing touches and the graphics. Thank you to sound engineer Colm O'Rourke. Thank you to my husband Charlie Moon for the beautiful music and support. And thank you to my agent Jane Russell for your encouragement. Finally, a huge thank you to all of you for listening, and I hope you like the podcast. If you do, please like, share and subscribe. Brand new episodes every Wednesday at 11:00.